Amos Cohen, welcome to Radio Times. The crisis in the housing market was the trigger that led to the implosion on Wall Street 3 years ago and the recession that followed. While the stock market has largely rebounded, there's an ongoing and serious housing crisis. Today, one quarter of homes are either underwater or in foreclosure, and this is one of the impediments to economic recovery. Here's what President Obama said about what the White House wants to do for responsible homeowners when he addressed a joint session of Congress last week.
We're going to work with federal housing agencies to help more people refinance their mortgages at interest rates that are now near 4%. That's a step. I know you guys must be for this, because that's a step that can put more than $2,000 a year in a family's pocket and give a lift to an economy still burdened by the drop in housing prices.
Today on Radio Times, we're going to take a look at the housing market and what can be done to fix it. And we have two guests who have joined us by telephone. Susan Wachter is a professor of finance and real estate at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. She's co-editor with Marty Smith of a book called The American Mortgage System, Crisis and Reform. Good morning, Susan Wachter.
Good morning.
Also with us is Kathleen Engel, and she's the Associate Dean for Intellectual Life and a Professor of Law at Suffolk University. She's co-author of a book called The Subprime Virus, Reckless Credit, Regulatory Failure, and Next Steps. Kathleen Engel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thanks for having me, Marty, and hi, Susan.
I know you two know each other, and we're happy to have you both together. Let me quote something from the Associated Press from this morning. The number of U.S. homes that received an initial default notice, the first step in the foreclosure process, jumped 33% in August from July, representing a nine-month high and the biggest monthly gain in 4 years. Susan Wachter, if I can get a response from you, what does this tell us?
Obviously, it tells us the market is troubled, and it continues to be troubled. That number specifically is very dramatic, but it doesn't tell us that the market itself is dramatically falling off the cliff. As you well know, we've been in a robo-signing aftermath crisis, and as things are sorted out, some banks, in particular Bank of America, I believe, is accelerating its foreclosure process.
Does that mean, Kathleen Engel, that the robo-signing was fixed?
No, the robo-signing hasn't been fixed yet. And the robo-signing isn't the only problem. There are a number of different problems in the paperwork that related to these the many, many millions of home loans that were sold and converted into Wall Street securities. Part of the problems were that there were these affidavits that were signed by robo-signers who said that there was information they had reviewed and that information showed that people were in default when, in fact, they hadn't reviewed the information at all. So they were completely fraudulent affidavits. But the other problem is that there are large questions about whether banks even have the right to foreclose because they don't necessarily have all the paperwork in order, completely apart from the robo-signing issue. And all of these different factors are playing into what's happening in the housing crisis right now. On the one hand, you have buyers who might otherwise be willing to buy at foreclosure who are concerned about whether they can get good title, because if the banks didn't have the right to foreclose in the first place, they may be buying property that ultimately they can't get title insurance for, that they don't lawfully own. And then another problem is that there's a lot of litigation pending out there. And with that litigation and the different settlement proposals that are on the table, like the one with the state AGs, that kind of clogs up the market too, because there's uncertainty about how to deal with these properties. The default notices don't necessarily mean that the banks are then going to go straight to foreclosure. All the default notice means is that the people have gotten a letter saying you've missed your payments.
Let me go back to you, Susan Wachter, and I want our listeners to understand when we hear that something like 25%, one quarter of homeowners are either underwater or in some process of foreclosure, have we ever been in this situation before?
No, this is unprecedented historically. You need to go back to the Great Depression, and then you will find numbers similar to that among farmers, for example. Almost half were in default or foreclosure, but that's the extreme that one has to go back to. This is unprecedented in modern American history.
And would you say, Susan, it's also part of the drag on this economy? We're hearing that today more people signing up for unemployment.
Absolutely. And it's an extremely serious concern. We have not had a recovery in the United States without housing being part of the recovery. And the typical recovery is that housing leads. That's important because housing construction means jobs, and no housing construction or housing construction at the historic lows that they are today, one third of their average, means that there aren't jobs from that very important sector, and not only the housing, but all the related purchases that usually go with a new home. That sector is not contributing at all to job growth, and that is a significant problem in itself. We can still, of course, get recovery, but it means the burden on all the other sectors is very difficult, very high, and we're near stall speed right now in job growth. That's a significant problem because, of course, it then affects the demand for housing. People don't have jobs or are worried about their job. That's just one more factor of why they won't go out and purchase a home. So we're in a kind of a self-fulfilling expectations of no growth, no purchase of home, therefore no sales of homes, therefore no construction, therefore no jobs, which is very worrying.
Indeed. And Kathleen, we have done untold hours on this question, but I need a short answer if it's possible. Has the country, though, in any way fixed the causes of the mortgage crisis and then, of course, the Wall Street implosion that followed?
Yes, major pieces of the problem have been solved. And some of them have been solved by legislation through, for example, the Dodd-Frank Act. Some have been solved by the market. And when I say by the market, what I mean is that investors who in the past relied on credit rating agencies when deciding whether to invest in different securities that were backed by mortgages are now demanding that they get actual information that they can review. So rather than simply having a good housekeeping seal being put on a security by Moody's or Standard & Poor's, the investors are now saying, no, we're not going to just trust that good housekeeping seal. We want to see exactly what we're buying and what the risks are. So that's also a very important change in the market. What hasn't been dealt with and that could still be a problem in the future is the various derivatives that were created, the collateralized debt obligations and the different swap instruments. Those we still haven't figured out how to regulate. And the other lingering problem is we may have done a very good job and probably have done a good job in regulating mortgages to prevent this kind of crisis, but there are lots of other credit products out there that can get people in trouble. Prepaid cards, some of them have very high fees. Credit cards are more heavily regulated, but there's still some problems. Auto loans, auto title loans, check cashers. So there's still products lurking out there that could have the same viral effect on the economy that subprime mortgages did, which is that you have a high-risk product, that risk gets diversified and sold, and securities are created out of it, and then people place bets on the securities, and all of a sudden you have what is one little credit card transaction or one little payday loan that can have a viral and exponential effect on the larger economy.
That sounds like a deja vu to me.
Yes.
You're saying yes?
It could be. I mean, these are smaller dollar amounts. The properties are unsecured, so it's not, or the debt is unsecured, so it's not like somebody's home. These are debts that can be, from a consumer perspective, can be discharged in bankruptcy, but it doesn't mean that there still can't be a lot of exposure in the market to these kinds of risky products.
Susan, let me go back to you and even going back to the Obama administration's plan to help some of these families that have been facing foreclosure, and only about 800,000 borrowers were helped out of the 4 million that were, or I guess are, still eligible. What happened there? Why wasn't that program able to address this problem?
Well, let me answer that, and also let me go back to the previous question, because I'm not as optimistic as Kathleen on whether we've solved the problem, and it's a related. Today, mortgages are all-time affordable, 3.5 for adjustable rate, 4 for a fixed, and yet applications are down, certainly acceptances are down. It's very difficult to get a mortgage today because of the ramp-up in requirements to levels which historically just never have seen. And we haven't solved that problem. We swung from one end where almost anybody could get a mortgage, if they're breathing, to the other end where good credit risk have to have 20% down, unless, of course, their credit is absolutely pristine, and then they can get a mortgage that will be underwritten by Fannie and Freddie. That means the taxpayer. But that's not going to last for the long run. We cannot rely on a federalized mortgage system for the long run. The Fannie-Freddie model, which busts and which we are now basically the government has taken over, so it's now the federal government that's providing these mortgages, mortgage insurance, that is highly contentious. It is not going to last for X number of years. We don't know. And there is no consensus on replacement. So let's go back then to the HAMP and the HARP.
And these are the programs to help these particular families.
Exactly. And if you can refinance, you have refinanced. Today's mortgages are so low that everybody who can has. So then the effort is to those whose credit is somewhat tinged, they've had a delinquency, can we get those people into refinance? And that really is voluntary. That's up to the banks themselves. And while the HARP gives various incentives for the banks to do that, again, it is the bank's decision. The banks are, perhaps understandably, I mean, they've been through this period of going to one extreme, but they are, in fact, making it they are looking very carefully at every application, and they are not refinancing unless you have rather pristine credit.
And
I'd like to add,
yeah, Kathleen,
to
about 30 seconds, and then we have to take a break. But yeah, go right ahead.
Okay. Well, I want to say that I agree with Susan completely in what she's saying about the current condition of the market. What I was saying about the Dodd-Frank and some of the mortgage reforms is simply that they will have eliminated many of the problems that led to the subprime crisis. But we have much bigger a problem right now in terms of our dead mortgage market, which is another issue.
Let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Kathleen Engel. She's the Associate Dean for Intellectual Life and a Professor of Law at Suffolk University. Also with us is Susan Wachter. She's a Professor of Finance and Real Estate at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania. We are talking about the housing crisis and taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Reading Terminal Market supports WHYY. Reading Terminal Market at 12th and Arch Streets has been a Center City landmark for over 100 years. The market's 80 local merchants offer farm fresh meat, seafood, and poultry, plus produce, baked goods, Pennsylvania Dutch foods, and dozens of eating options from Philly favorites to a wide range of ethnic specialties. Parking is available at the Parkway Garage at 12th and Filbert Streets. Information online at readingterminalmarket.org. Reading Terminal Market, fresh and local every day.
At the heart of everything we do at WHYY is one thing, storytelling. We try to inform, engage, inspire, and connect through deep, colorful stories. And NewsWorks Tonight brings together the best reporting from our network of journalists in one smart, lively regional news magazine. Weeknights at 6 on WHYY-FM, or listen online at WHYY.org and NewsWorks.org. There's also the podcast, and you can follow NewsWorks Tonight on Twitter and Facebook. And that's the story.
Folkways at Gwynedd supports WHYY. Guided by time-honored Quaker values, Folkways is a continuing care retirement community for adults 65 and over. Since 1967, Folkways has been providing its residents with a comprehensive health program and financial stability. Folkways is committed to friendship, caring, and respect as a way of life. For more information or a personal tour, the number is 215-283-7010.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. We are talking about the housing crisis, which is, of course, fixing the housing crisis, key to improving the U.S. economy. Today, about a quarter of homes are either in foreclosure or they're underwater. That means an owner owes more than their house is worth. Housing prices have dropped to 2003 levels, and new construction is at a 50-year low. All of this, of course, troubling not just to homeowners, but to the U.S. economy. And we're talking with Susan Wachter and Kathleen Engel on taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Susan, I ran across this question, and it's going to sound really simple, knowing how complicated the answer is. But, you know, 3 years ago, the banking system was essentially bailed out, perhaps imperfectly, but nonetheless bailed out. And the question today is whether the same should be done for homeowners. What do you think about that?
It would be good if it were possible. At least it would be good to have the option thoroughly. Of course, we have to look at it. The problem is bailing out 25% of mortgage borrowers is an extraordinarily large number. The other factor is, of these 25% home mortgage borrowers who are underwater, a large percentage of them, in fact, majority, in fact, 75%, are paying on their mortgage. Mm-hmm. They're paying their full mortgage. So there are issues of equity, of distribution. Who bears the loss? The loss has already happened, and now the question is, who bears the loss? And those, of course, are decisions for policymakers, for the people to decide, but they're very difficult and very contentious. For a long-run history lesson on this, we could look to Japan. They had similar serious problems after their banking system crashed, and they basically had to grow out of it because they couldn't. It was unacceptable politically to bail out all the underwater borrowers. And we're in a similar difficult political position. I do want to go back to something that my colleague Kathleen said earlier. And I am, again, not nearly as optimistic as Kathleen is that we've solved the problem. I don't believe that Dodd-Frank has solved the problem. I think we have still a problem of what will the housing finance system look like in the aftermath of the crisis. Right now, we are reliant on government, and that will not work in the long run.
And I do want to pick up on that, but Kathleen Engel, I'm curious about this whole issue, I guess, of moral hazard, about rewarding some people who, you know, recklessly got mortgages that they really shouldn't have gotten. Do you think there's a danger of if we could figure out a way to bail out this whole system, that there's a danger of rewarding people who were irresponsible?
There's no question that whatever the solution is, and we are desperate for one, there will be some undeserving people who will be rewarded. But I think that we've already seen the government make that decision in the context of the big banks. Look at the undeserving people who put us into this situation, who are still getting tremendous salaries, huge bonuses, who got golden parachutes to leave their leadership positions, and entire institutions that have been bailed out. When AIG was bailed out, that was one of the biggest beneficiaries of that was Goldman Sachs. And Goldman Sachs was complicit, as we know, in the entire crisis and the meltdown. So if we want to talk about undeserving entities or people benefiting from some type of a rescue program, I think we need to be honest that, in general, that's a risk with any kind of policy and a reality with any kind of policy. And secondly, we've already made a decision as a country that we're willing to bail out undeserving people to save a sector, for example, saving the banking sector. So for me, it's something of a red herring, and I think there are ways to avoid really widespread moral hazard. One is that we can limit the relief that we provide homeowners to people who occupy the homes, so that investors, the more speculative borrowers, who were just trying to, you know, get a loan, wait until the house appreciated, then sell it, would not benefit from a bailout. A second thing to do would be to say that if there is going to be a bailout, and the lenders, I would expect that the lenders should have to take a haircut. So I'm very much in favor of principal cramdowns, which is where the principal amount of the loan is reduced. So if the banks have to take a haircut or the investors have to take a haircut on that, they should have the right to be able to contest a modification of a loan if they have evidence that that borrower engaged in some type of fraud. So, for example, if a borrower lied on a loan application, they shouldn't get the advantage of some type of a bailout. But I would put the burden of proof for that on the lender themselves, or the servicer or investor, whoever is holding or representing the interests of the whoever owns the note.
Susan, this gets a bit into the weeds, but I kept running into this as I was preparing for today's show. The choice between refinancing a mortgage at a lower rate or reducing the principal, is that significant from your perspective?
Is that a significant choice? Is that
yes,
your question?
Yes, exactly.
Oh, I see. The refinancing, of course, has already helped a tremendous amount. And the fact that interest rates are low is already very important in reducing the burden for many households. I think that part of the equation is perhaps underestimated. And the threat of interest rates go up of undermining that major help to housing markets is also underestimated.
And that's Susan Wachter joining us along with Kathleen Engel, and we are talking about the housing crisis such as it is. She's a professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, co-editor with Marty Smith of a book called The American Mortgage System, Crisis and Reform. Also with us, Kathleen Engel. She's the Associate Director for Intellectual Life and a professor of law at Suffolk University, co-author of a book called The Subprime Virus, Reckless Credit, Regulatory Failure, and Next Steps. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. That's 1-888-477-WHYY. Let me get some callers in on the conversation. We'll go to, looks like Jim, who's joining us from Chestnut Hill. Jim, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning.
I have, over the last year or so, I first heard this from a professor at Columbia University, and then recently I've heard more talk about this prior to Obama's job stimulus program. The idea is to allow anyone who has a mortgage, whether it's underwater, overwater, 10% equity, no equity, but if you currently have a mortgage, to allow that person to refinance the mortgage at today's lower rates. It seems to me that this is a program where no one would lose because the banks aren't having to take a reduced principal amount. The homeowners win because they will have lower payments. And if they were going to foreclose on that property, this will help forestall their foreclosure, or they will foreclose anyway. But I don't understand why this program, which could greatly help the housing sector and stimulate the economy with more money in everyone's pocket, I don't understand why this hasn't gained more traction.
Well, Jim, I should say that that's an economics professor at Columbia University named Christopher Mayer, and he's gotten a fair amount of attention for his proposal, and I appreciate you raising that today on Radio Times. And Kathleen Engel, let me get first a response from you. What do you think about that idea?
Well, one of the things that the federal government wants to do is to get out of the mortgage business. And if this program is financed by the federal government, then all we're doing is transferring the risk from the private sector to the public sector. That's what we're doing. And we're making the government essentially the mortgage market. The second thing is, many people who have particularly the subprime loans and the Alt-A products have second mortgages on their homes. And those second mortgages are oftentimes held by the actual banks. And to refinance the banks are going to have to agree that their second mortgages are going to be second, you know, they're going to continue to be in the second position, which is a complicated sort of legal but very important practical problem. And it only makes sense to refinance these borrowers if they can get rid of those second mortgages, too. If the banks have to get rid of the second, are going to have to, you know, release those second mortgages, then the banks are going to lose that asset on their balance sheet. And then we're going to run back into the problem of whether the banks are solvent. Mm. And as soon as that is, and I think this is one of the biggest fears that the federal government has right now, that as soon as they take any policy steps that could threaten the solvency of the banks, they're going to run headlong into their promise to the American people that there was no longer a belief that there was an institution in the United States that was too big to fail. What Another you, obstacle, if I
yeah,
may.
Yeah, go ahead, Susan. Yeah, please.
Is the, by the way, it's Glenn Hubbard and Chris Mayer, and it's a very interesting proposal. A serious obstacle is the following. Many of the mortgages that are not refinanced have problems with them. Either the borrower is delinquent or the mortgage was originated with perhaps misrepresentations on what's called reps and warranties. At least they are under great right now oversight as to whether there were misleading representation on those loans. Those loans that were originated and put into the secondary market with errors, the secondary market, Fannie and Freddie, and those Fannie and Freddie entities are now taxpayer-owned, are putting forth the argument that these are errors of the banks, and the banks ought to make the taxpayer whole. And in fact, if these loans are refinanced with Fannie and Freddie's assistance, then Fannie and Freddie can no longer make that argument that these loans, by right, should be put back to those who made errors in originating them.
Wow. I mean, I have to say, as we keep continuing to talk about this, I feel like we're getting, you know, deeper and deeper into a morass. As you were saying, Kathleen, you... There at least I'm gleaning some degree of optimism from you, but how do we, in simple terms, and maybe that's because we're talking about real estate and housing and mortgages, perhaps that's not possible, but in simple terms, how do we get out of this mess? Sorry. Sorry.
I don't know if I can even, I don't even know if I have an answer, never mind an answer that I could say in simple terms.
Okay.
I think that there are a couple of things that I think we need to really think about. First of all, we have to be cognizant of the impact of anything that we do on the banks, because if major banks in the United States go down, as I say to my students, people will starve to death in Africa. They're just, these financial transactions are so intertwined and viral, and we can't see a massive bank failure in the United States right now. So we have to take that into account. But I do think there's some practical things that we could do. One is that to allow the bankruptcy courts to reduce the principal of borrowers' homes loans in bankruptcy. Right now, if you go into bankruptcy and you own a second home or you have a boat, the bankruptcy judge can reduce the amount of your loan on your vacation home or on your boat, but they can't do it on your home.
Hmm.
We need to change that. That just doesn't make sense. It's kind of an irrational thing. And Susan spoke earlier about the farm crisis. In fact, one of the things that did happen during the farm crisis was that the federal government did allow the bankruptcy courts to cram down the loans that the farmers had. And in fact, ultimately, the farmers did a really good job paying back their loans after they were crammed down. So it didn't have terrible consequences in the economy. A second thing that we need to do is I think we need to get away from the idea that refinancing is the solution, because it is going to end up just being the government refinancing. The government's going to have to take on a lot of very high-risk loans. There are people who have loans that, frankly, can't afford to repay them, and we need to get and it doesn't matter what the government does or what the lenders do, they're still not going to be able to afford to repay them. We need to accelerate the process of having those properties foreclosed, put on the market, sold to people who are eager to become homeowners right now. So we need to have a system that allows those borrowers to self-identify and get some assistance to be able to make the transition to rental housing or whatever it may be, so that property can be really an asset in the economy. And the other thing we need to do is we absolutely have to clear up these clogs in the foreclosure process right now. The lack of documentation, all of the different legal problems, all of the lawsuits that are pending, lawsuits by investors, lawsuits by borrowers, and it's very, very tough nut to crack because the foreclosure law is by nature a function of state law, right? It's about property that's in a state. It's not like a commercial arrangement or something like that, and it's very much state law that governs the foreclosure process. I think we need to think hard about a kind of one-time emergency federal provision to move these foreclosures along, because if the properties go into foreclosure, then we start moving that housing market in the ways that Susan was talking about.
What do you think, Susan Wachter?
Well, I disagree.
Go ahead. That's why you're here.
I disagree with what maybe I was just having said. No. I don't think that at this point bringing many properties, millions of properties, accelerating them to foreclosure, I think that would be a disaster. I think that we need to... There is a process. It is already happening. Properties are coming to foreclosure. I'm not suggesting that we further stop that process. But there isn't an easy solution. The solution is going to have to be the recovery of the overall economy, and that will take time. On top of that, I do agree with Kathleen that people will not be able to maintain their homes. Eventually, we'll have to become renters, and that is a solution that, again, needs to happen over time. It's not going to happen overnight. And that is already happening. There are investors. There are a number of startups right now that are in the process, and the federal government is looking at ways to assist this, where, in fact, people can stay in their homes and rent their homes, perhaps with a potential to buy back if and when they get back on their feet. That is the solution in the long run. It's not the solution to the housing finance system. That's a separate problem. What is going to replace our broken housing finance system? And we're not there yet. We need to develop consensus. If I may say so, yep, the book does have some interesting proposals that are related to proposals that are in Congress right now, but in our situation where we are right now, there's very little consensus, and we must develop consensus. I think that can happen, but it requires a lot of consideration of the alternatives out there. I think there's some movement in that direction. It will take political energy to make it happen.
Well, let's take another short break, and we'll get back to our conversation talking with Susan Wachter, professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, and with Kathleen Engel. She's the associate dean for intellectual life and a professor of law at Suffolk University. And we're taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back.
The Oriental Rug Room at 10,000 Villages in Ephrata supports WHYY, featuring a large selection of hand-knotted Oriental rugs made by fairly paid adults. Their full inventory of rugs is available online at rugs.10,000villages.com.
The Philadelphia Museum of Art supports WHYY, presenting Rembrandt and the Face of Jesus, the first exhibition in Philadelphia ever to include the rare painting, prints, and portraits of Rembrandt, the great painter of the Dutch Golden Age. Rembrandt and the Face of Jesus reassembles a group of more than 50 intimate portraits of Christ that have not been seen together since they left the artist's home in Amsterdam more than 350 years ago, on view through October 30th only. More information at philamuseum.org.
I'm Robin Young. Join us next time for the news and these stories here and now. A new report says 12% of the country's bridges need to be rebuilt. One in southern Indiana was just shut down after cracks were found. We'll take a look at the country's aging and ailing infrastructure. Also, a leading Chinese writer flees the country, but does that mean the government wins? That's Public Radio's Daily Digest of News and Culture here and now.
today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Lincoln, presenting the new Lincoln MKZ Hybrid, a luxury hybrid.
Test. This is a statewide required monthly test originating from the Pennsylvania Emergency Management Agency, Harrisburg. This is only a test.
Numerous trend watchers and statisticians, Steve Murray from Real Trends, Gary Keller from Keller Williams, even Susie Orman, have said that this decline that we're in could be as long as 7 to 10 years before values in the housing market start to level off and then ultimately begin an uptick. I'd love to hear from Susan, the professor from Penn, her thoughts about that, and particularly for our local market here in southeastern Pennsylvania.
Rebecca, I appreciate the call. And Susan, go ahead.
Not a forecaster. Certainly the next few years, we're not going, next year for sure, next year or two, we're not likely to see prices go up much. Much of that does depend, of course, on the overall inflation rate. And to the degree that we have inflation in the overall economy, and I'm not predicting that either, but we're at a 2-3% inflation rate, housing prices in a year or so are likely to be part of that overall nominal increases. That the reason I'm saying that is, assuming that we don't go into a second recession, and I don't even like to say that, we're not far from the bottom. We've been bouncing along the bottom for several months now, and even more broadly, a year. That is, the dramatic house price decline after the boom is already over. We had that 20-30% decline. Now we're, in the last year, seeing ups and downs. We're bouncing along the bottom. And if you look at ratios that reveal fundamentals, that is, the relationship of prices to rents, the relationship of prices to income, we're not far from what might be called a fundamental bottom. So prices are not way out of line with fundamentals. Of course, that is assuming that interest rates right. don't go up, they stay low, and that job formation continues. But if we have job formation continuing, we can see this bottom forming, maybe not this year. I don't see that. I think that we're going to have to wait till next spring, buying season. But 2013, 2014, now that doesn't mean that we're going to see a spike up at that point. I absolutely agree with these prognosticators that are saying we're a long way from a healthy housing market.
Kathleen, taking Rebecca's question and just putting a bit of a spin on it, but I remember, you know, 5 to 10 years ago when there was this real estate boom, I never understood how a first-time homeowner could afford one of these houses and certainly afford when they were giving, you know, mortgages at a 20% down. But it seems to me that now there are opportunities because houses are much more affordable.
Yes, yeah, so the prices have gone down and interest rates are really low, but the underwriting standards have become very tough.
Right.
So if you think about somebody who 5 years ago was entering the market, could buy a home with no money down and maybe with some blemishes on their credit record, and they were able to get financing, maybe not even a subprime loan, maybe what they called an Alt-A product or something like that. And they were essentially getting a loan based on an expectation that their equity would grow just because housing prices were increasing. Those borrowers now, their only options are to be able to come up with 20% down or to go to be eligible for an FHA product, which is a government-insured product. So there just aren't the same options. That's one of the sad things right now is that this is a perfect time to buy a house. Interest rates are low, prices are low, and the people that we want to get in buying houses can't. And I think the other thing that's very important about the market right now is that the most abusive lending was targeted at the poorest communities, and it is the poorest communities that are suffering both because of that targeted lending, but also because those houses aren't moving there. So when I was talking about the concerns about the foreclosures, I'm talking about looking at working class and poor neighborhoods where the homes are abandoned, where banks have started a foreclosure process, the borrowers move out because they believe their home is going to be foreclosed upon. The bank never finishes the process, either because they don't want to own the property or because they can't prove that they own the loan. And then the property ends up vacant, and then it drives down the housing values of everybody else in the area who maybe never even took out a subprime loan. And then the neighborhood starts to decline. Shops close up, crime moves in, jobs disappear. So my biggest concern right now is what's happening in the moderate and low-income neighborhoods, because that's really where this crisis is being felt the most.
Susan, you want to add to that?
Well, that is a real problem, the problem of foreclosed properties that are vacant and that add to actual distress in the community and then perhaps cause other prices to fall, leading to follow-on foreclosures. This is a real concern where there's concentrated foreclosures, and Kathleen's absolutely right. We do see pockets of that are already in parts of even near us in Philadelphia, already distressed neighborhoods, which have been turning around in the periods of 1990s, 2000s, which are a real concern. I want to go back to the previous caller.
Sure.
And say that, you know, in some ways, Philadelphia and Pennsylvania and the our region more broadly were safe from the worst of this, not the city itself, but the broader region. Our prices never went up as much, and they never fell as much either. And we are absolutely one of the regions in the country where we seem to have found some stability. Now, again, that's depending on what happens to unemployment and whether we see a tick up in interest rates. But without that, it's always difficult to say, is this the right time to buy a house? I'm certainly not pointing to that. But it is true that one of the problems is that people are on the sidelines. They are getting jobs. They're becoming renters and not homeowners because of the fear that housing prices will fall further. And that is a real fear. But once we get some solidity in the housing market, and that may happen over the next 6 months to a year, let's say, it's possible that the recovery will accelerate, not again in higher housing prices, but in firming of expectations, which will allow us to form a real bottom and help us take us out of this crisis. So it's not as bad as it was, certainly in 2008 and 2009. We're not in that kind of spiraling down market where prices are falling and expectations of prices are falling. And we have a possibility that we might see some expectations of stability in the next year.
Let me get Lisa from Newark, Delaware, to join our conversation. Lisa, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Yes. I'm just always so saddened when I hear such learned people seemingly always to go on the one side supporting the government, because it seems to always be against big business. And so much of this mortgage debacle started, not all of it, certainly it went even before that, with the end of the Clinton era, but with the lovely Dodd-Frank bill. And they so strong-armed the banks into forcing the poorest of the poor, as I believe Kathy mentioned, into these loans that, you know, wonderful American dream that they had no business in being a part of. And so you had not only that, but another example.
Well, you know what, Lisa, let me take your point, and this obviously goes back, it predates actually Dodd-Frank, and Kathleen Engel, again, you know, we have talked about this on the radio, but I think it bears, you know, further discussion, which is, I guess, the irresponsibility of some homeowners, and Lisa is saying you can't just blame the banks. Is she right?
There are so many entities to blame. The book that I wrote with Pat McCoy, The Subprime Virus, really, we take no enemies.
I mean, we take no prisoners, you know, in the book. There were very bad decisions about deregulating various derivative instruments made by the government. There were bad decisions by the government relating to the types of securities that Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac could invest in. We made a mistake by pushing home ownership without accompanying that policy with mandates for responsible lending. We failed to regulate the biggest banks in the country that were either directly engaged in risky lending or that owned affiliates that or subsidiaries that were engaged in risky lending. We didn't adequately regulate the credit rating agencies, and the risk was all over the place, but that was passed along, and it was sliced and diced and divided up in a way that everybody thought they could keep on, and I'm talking now about the private sector, that
sure.
they could keep on running the industry without carrying very much risk. But the risk was still there. It's not that the risk disappeared. In fact, it was like sweat in our germs in a locker room. You know, it was just growing and growing and growing. So there's fault on both political parties. There's fault in the government sector. There's fault in the private sector. There's fault that rests with borrowers, with real estate developers and contractors. There is blame in the American people that we have not yet learned that during good times is when we should exercise restraint. Instead, we think we're just going to, you know, all get on that same train. It's going to be good forever. I can't point my finger at the government or the private sector and say you are responsible. I do think, however, that Dodd-Frank is a step in the right direction.
Let me get to Mary on from Pennington with it looks like a related question, and I'll put this one to you, Susan Wachter. And Mary, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Okay, thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome.
I've often wondered what was the logic in the subprime mortgage industry's targeting of low-income borrowers and low-income neighborhoods? I mean, you would think that these would be the people who would be least likely to be able to repay their mortgages.
Susan?
And it's not 100% true. Subprime, of course, was across the board. In fact, as it grew in 2005, 2006, 2007, subprime and Alt-A were, and other non-traditional, very risky products, were middle income. That's why mainstream America is suffering. It's really across the board. And Fannie and Freddie were part of the problem. There's absolutely no doubt about it. They were, they're part of the, and they're now, of course, government. They were implicitly guaranteed by the government. That's why the taxpayers taking them over. And they caused the problem to get much more severe by their purchasing of what was called Alt-A loans, which were not documented income loans. I absolutely agree with Kathleen and the previous caller that the government was part of the problem. If I may go back, though, because part of what the previous caller said is not completely correct, and that is the programs that were on the books starting in actually Nixon and thereafter, Community Reinvestment Act programs, which were loans that were very carefully underwritten to lower-income households. Now, I'm not saying whether I'm in favor of these or not. That's kind of irrelevant. But as an economist, I can say there's much research, recent research, not that I have done, but very good research, which actually says these are not the loans that are the problem. These loans actually have not gone into default in the numbers that the other non-CRA loans. That program was on the books for decades, and it just doesn't match the crisis. And besides, actually, we've had a crisis in commercial real estate as well, and of course, that's nothing to do with it. So it's a deeper problem, and the problem is exacerbated and allowed by the lack of transparency. We, although anecdotally we knew, and I was writing papers, and Kathleen, others were, and saying this, there is a problem here in 2005 and 2006. The collection of data and information to be able to systematically point to the underwriting deterioration was not in place. And that must be changed. We need transparency in mortgages, which are the most important financial instrument in this country going forward.
And Kathleen, we have about a minute before we have to say goodbye, but a house, a home, is often an individual's or a family's only form of wealth or assets. Having gone through it and being in this process of mortgage crisis and foreclosure, should we think of a house as an asset or a liability, or does it depend where you live or who you are?
A house is an asset because over time you're able to get an increasing amount of equity. So it is an asset in that respect, but not everybody should have a house as their asset. And one of the problems is that we have talked about housing in a very simplified way, and we need to rethink how we want to talk about a home. Does that mean home ownership for you? Does that mean renting? How do you make the right decision given how likely you are to move, how old you are, how much you like to fix things in your house,
right,
how much money you have, all of these factors. And we can't simply say home ownership is a good thing as a sort of knee-jerk policy.
Well, on that note, I thank both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Kathleen Engel, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And Susan Wachter, thank you very much as well.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Susan Wachter, professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School at the University of Pennsylvania, co-editor with Marty Smith of a book called The American Mortgage System, Crisis and Reform. Kathleen Engel is the associate director for intellectual life and a professor of law at Suffolk University, co-author of a book called The Subprime Virus, Reckless Credit, Regulatory Failure, and Next Steps. Thank you for those phone calls. Stay with us. We've got hour two waiting in the wings.